How'd you like Anne of Green Gables? Wasn't it scary as heck?
Hey, readers. I'm Anne Bogle, and this is What Should I Read Next, episode 138. Welcome to the show that's dedicated to answering the question that plagues every reader. What should I read next? We don't get bossy on this show. What we will do here is give you the information you need to choose your next read. Every week, we'll talk all things books and reading and do a little literary matchmaking with one guest. Today, I'm having a bookish heart-to-heart with Gwen Glazer and Frank Kalarius about serving the public by way of literacy. Gwen and Frank work in unique roles at the New York Public Library System and together host the wonderful podcast, The Librarian Is In.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Readers, I learned a lot about what it's been like to see the role of librarians shift over the past decade, how each library adapts to meet their patrons' needs, how you can give back to your library in valuable ways, and how all of you are going to want Gwen's job. Gwen and Frank are a joy to talk to, and I think you'll enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Let's get to it. Gwen and Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hi.
Now is especially a great time to be talking about libraries with summer reading and new releases. Kids are out of school, if that's you. I don't know about you all. We have a ton of teachers and students in our audience, and it's like a whole new world in summer of possibility.
It is. It is indeed. It's a different time in summer. Actually, I should say it's not so much a different time. When I first started, like 25 years ago in the library, it used to be summer was this very big downtime. And now we've noticed the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, there's no difference in busyness during the summer as during any other season, which is sort of cool.
That's so interesting because of the branch I lived next door to for the first 13 years of my adult life. Does that sound like all wistful and poetic and like it should be sepia toned? Their circulation is way, way up in the summer because summer reading is so big. They have so many kids in that neighborhood. Okay, well, now's probably a good time to talk about what your libraries are like. You both work in the New York Public Library System. What do you do there? And also, Frank, 25 years, are you serious?
Yeah.
You don't sound like an old man, Frank.
I am an old man. I'm very old. I could be both your parents. Gwen, why don't you start?
Okay,
since you have the more iconoclastic position.
I'm not sure about that, but I have a position that I feel like is less sort of relevant maybe to exactly what we are talking about right now. Because I once was a branch librarian and once had a kind of like traditional, you know, talking to patrons, doing reference, wandering around, taking care of a collection kind of job. But currently what I do at the New York Public Library is that I am a recommendations librarian in the reader services unit. My boss and I sort of joke that it's like a dream job that shouldn't exist. But that's actually not a joke, because it kind of
that's
is
exactly
a dream job.
What I was just thinking.
Yeah, it's really, and it really is pretty amazing too. It really is just doing book recommendations in all kinds of different forms, both directly and then helping the staff to feel more comfortable talking about books with patrons. That's really my focus, is books and book recommendations.
Well, I should also add, now that I've established my longevity, but even before like I started, there was no such thing as a reader's recommendation department in the library. There was like 50, 60 years ago, from what I read historically, I was not there. In my last 20 years or so, there was never that department. And I think with the rise of digital and internet and blah, 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 there is that need for recommendations and interchange with other people who are reading. And it didn't exist until, when did it start?
I think it was about 5 years ago.
Yeah, like 5 years ago.
And it happened because of a sort of a really positive, I think, organizational shift, where libraries for a really long time have been so many things to so many people. We do a tremendous number of things that I think in somewhere in there, books got a little bit lost. And so I think there was kind of an effort to bring books and reading back to the forefront of what our sort of core mission and goals were,
right,
without getting rid of any of the other really important things that we do, but also to bring a focus kind of back to reading. And so that's when reader services.
There was and I wonder if you agree, like there was a panic situation, at least for me, for a couple of years, about 10 years ago, about the rise of digital, the rise of the internet. Where do we get information? How do we read books? That made libraries and librarians wonder, like, where are we? What are we doing? Where are we going to be? Like, it was what we did over. And I think what Gwen said is absolutely right. But what's also even as important is that it was matched by the public's desire. It wasn't like, we're going to focus on reading because we're a library. Mm-hmm. We did that as well. But the public was like, we love reading too. And it became, what happened is all the digital stuff just made more choice. Now you can read a physical book, you can read a digital book, you can read however you want. It's a landscape of choice that is now leveled off, and everybody's sort of talking about books. So anyway.
You can't shut us up, because now I have something to say about that too. which is that for a long time, I think you're right, I actually wasn't a librarian yet when this conversation was really sort of at its peak, I think. But I do think that the people felt that there was this huge threat from digital materials, which to me, in retrospect, like starting at this job and starting as a librarian after that panic, it feels so silly to me, because it's all about the message, right? It's not the medium, it's the message. And so the fact that you're reading a book on an e-reader versus the fact that you're reading a physical book, it makes it really, like, truly, as long as you're reading a book, what difference does it make what device you're doing it on? And it's fine for you to have a preference. Lots of people have preferences. I personally love both of those things and really value both of them. And I think it set up this sort of false dichotomy where people felt like they had to choose. And they were like, but I love books. I love the way books smell. I love the feeling of holding a book in my hand. And all of that is great. Nobody's going to make you give up books. Like, just because digital stuff exists doesn't mean that you have to choose.
So I think what the internet did also, it just revealed all the readers out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it almost revealed amazingly how many readers there are. And connecting with libraries they supposedly trust, like the New York Public Library, it's been a wonderful thing.
In a typical day, what do you do?
So it's focusing on book recommendations in lots of different formats. And so I do some direct service every day where I answer patrons' requests for books, which usually are sort of read-alikes, like I really loved Stephen King's It, What Should I Read Next? Kinds of things over email. I do a little bit of that every day, usually about 10 questions every day. Which is good. It feels like calisthenics. That feels like I keep in shape by doing that. Usually in the evenings, actually, is when I answer those. And so we also provide recommendations on Twitter and Facebook. So we are pretty engaged in social media. I write blog posts that do book recommendations. And I also curate blog posts sort of calling out to our whole staff of book experts, saying, here's a question of the week. We usually do one or two a month, trying to say, can you recommend a book about X topic, or what's something you're really excited to read this summer, or, you know, everybody's talking about Game of Thrones, what's a book that you think is similar? I spend a lot of time writing and editing. And then I also spend some time pretty much every day dealing with our Best Books for Kids and Teens committees, which produce two lists at the end of the year of books that our librarians are the most excited about and our library staff members think deserve to sort of be raised up. So on a typical day, I would do all of those things, usually plus something else, plus some training, plus recording a podcast, stuff like that.
Your Facebook Live.
Yes, answering questions on Twitter.
Well, Facebook Live, you answer live recommendations, yes. Which could be stressful.
It can be stressful, but it's also really fun.
A challenge for you. I don't know if I could do that.
That's what my day looks like.
I think it's fascinating that you are recommending books directly to readers, but you're also helping librarians become better book recommenders.
Yeah.
How do you advise them? Like, I'm a new librarian, and you just overheard me tell somebody to read, I don't know, Anna Green Gables after they loved Stephen King. So how do you coach me on how to listen to readers and better recommend what to do next? And I'm sure we could talk about this all day, but like, where do you start?
I have to interject. I would love if you really did that. And I would love to see that patron come back to you and you with like your lovely face just smiling very earnestly like, how'd you like Anne of Green Gables? Wasn't it scary as heck? And that person thinking, this woman's crazy. Oh, that's so funny. I love that story. All right. Thank you.
I love it. So that's a really good question. And basically what we do is to go back to the guru of Reader's Advisory, whose name is Nancy Pearl. She really sort of established this idea about how to listen to people talk so that you can make a good book recommendation. And the core of her advice is a question that is, tell me about a book that you like. Mm-hmm. So you're not, and it's very specifically worded, and it's very important to word it that way, because when you, and you can kind of see this happen actually when you interact with a person, if you say, tell me about your favorite book, people freak out. Like, they can't pick a favorite. It makes them really panicky. They get really nervous. And another thing that we talk about in our jobs a lot is like this sort of active reader's advisory versus passive reader's advisory. A lot of what we're trained to do in school is have these like direct one-on-one interactive conversations with people. But the reality is that most of the book recommending that most library staff members do is not that kind of book recommending. That it's not, I'm looking at Frank because his branch is a little bit of an outlier because they have a lot of readers who interact a lot with their staff. But for most of us who were talking about books online or who are working in a branch that's very high usage but maybe doesn't circulate as many books, or I even think about myself when I was a kid, like I never went to a librarian and said, hey, can you recommend a book for me to read? I don't think I ever had any interaction with my childhood librarians in any capacity, and I was a very heavy library user. So we also think a lot about ways to make book recommendations, either just based on our own personal reading habits or read-alikes, so that people who aren't actually talking to us will be able to understand kind of where we're coming from and maybe get some ideas for new books to read without that personal interaction.
So I'm thinking about the books on the end caps, the books in the special displays. Exactly. Am I going to the right place?
Yes, exactly.
The books in the blogs.
Yep, exactly. Books and blog posts on displays. We also do these things in our library that we're very fond of called staff picks, where we describe it.
I love staff picks.
Yeah, right. They're
anywhere,
great, right?
Yeah, they're very successful.
And especially in libraries where you're often kind of faced with like this giant shelf of faceless, nameless books, and you're like, oh, what should I read? Yep. Just having something in there that says, I'm a page and I loved this book, or this book helped me train for a marathon, or, you know, this book reminds me so much of Anne of Green Gables. Like that kind of thing is really, really helpful and a way that we like to think about doing sort of passive reader's advisory too.
Oh, wow.
That sounds delightful. I'm glad this is a job in the world, Gwen.
Thank you. I am too.
All right, Frank, tell me about yours, especially since you have an outlier of a branch.
I've been chomping now at the bit.
Back when you were a very young man.
I know. And I still... my head's a little work done, but is that I feel like, and it's sort of fun to say this just in a fun way, I feel very antithetical to what Gwen just said. Like, I feel like where I come in is sort of like the other side of the story. And it sort of rooted in that panic I mentioned of a couple of years ago about where's digital taking us. And I personally like was like very concerned with where am I going? And it made me so energetic and so enthusiastic to sort of, to use that horrible word that I'm glad we don't use anymore, relevance. Like, how are we going to be relevant? I'm so tired. That question is over for me. The libraries are 1,000% relevant. But I got very focused. And what I realized my passion was, and I should say parenthetically, that a librarian who's in charge of a library, like I am, a particular branch, really does need to eventually find, by whatever means you can, your community that you love to serve, that you learn through the years, and it takes time, that you can make mistakes with that community and that community will understand you, that you can sort of speak their language, that you can, in whatever way feel connected to them that you can offer stuff that sort of gets a response. And that's why I use the arbiter of whether you have your community or not is whether you can make mistakes and the community be like, oh, yep, we get what you were trying to do. Mm-hmm. Let's go in this direction or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I love that you can making mistakes is so important in librarianship, I think.
What does a librarian mistake look like?
Me having an enthusiastic idea for a program, let's say, and then someone says to me, I work in a library in Greenwich Village in New York City, and it's a very activist, very liberal, very artistic, very, I think, fair-minded, very interested, engaged, aspirational, intellectual community, and not afraid to say what they want to say. And they have a reputation for also activizing and getting stuff done that they want to get stuff done. And so they will, and I love this. Like when I first, let's put it this way, when I first started there, I went to a little party to sort of meet and greet. And some gal came up to me and said, so you're the current manager. And the key there was current, meaning you're not going to be around much longer. You might not be around much longer, so I'm not going to trust you. And I actually loved her immediately because I was like, you should be wary of me. Who am I? I'm walking into your community. I'm in charge of your library. Why should you trust me? And then 18 years later, here I am. So it takes time. That's another thing. Like, it seems like people like to go from job to job to job, which is maybe not the way it was in a previous generation. And I didn't think it would be for me. But I've come to realize that longevity, if you do find the community you love to work in, is so important because you become a part of it in a very real way. Like longevity, if nothing else, breeds some sort of trust. Of course, you have to have a lot of other ingredients as well. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I was just having a conversation with a bookstore owner in a small town. And she said when she came in, people were super skeptical of her. Like, are you going to want to stay here?
Right.
Like, and aren't you kind of young to be doing the job you're doing? Like, deciding what we are going to be able to pluck off your shelves? Like, I don't know about this, you young whippersnapper.
Exactly. That's actually, used to... saying that made me realize, I wonder if there's something about libraries or reading or things that go on in libraries that is very much about trust.
People take their books and their reading and their communities really seriously. Yeah. And I think that's a good thing, but it sounds hard if you're new.
That maybe was the first step in realizing I was in the right community, because I actually liked the fact that she wasn't going to be like, hi, welcome, but that she was honest. And maybe the honesty of saying, I don't trust you. And I was like, you shouldn't, because you don't know me. So then I talked about a couple of years ago when I decided what to focus on about in the landscape of choice and digital and all that and where libraries were going. My focus became physical. Like, I became obsessed with, how do I make this library the best physical space? How do I bring people into this physical space? How do I meet people? How do I bring people together? I left the computers and I left the computers and the digital to all the other young librarian. No, I don't think it's age related, to be honest. I think there are plenty of older librarians who are obsessed with digital and stuff like that. I don't think it plays out age-wise. I've talked to some 20-something librarians who are not at all into some digital formats and only use their phones to text. Anyway, that's another whole story. But so I focused on the physicality.
So was that because you felt a personal passion for the physical, or is that because you felt like librarians were handling the digital?
No, you hit it. I had to find my passion. I had to focus my passion. I was very enthusiastic about libraries. And then I said, I want to focus on what I want to do. And that was what I wanted to do. And I also felt like the library I manage is a very beautiful library. So we have that. I have that, to me, almost responsibility. It's not like, ooh, I'm in a beautiful library, I can relax and kick up my feet. I felt like I had to really, really work to earn that managerial position of this beloved landmark building. And I wanted to make it alive inside. I wanted it to be a living place. So passion comes first. I always tell librarians that I work with, like, your programming, your book recommendations, everything comes from your interests. Don't fake it. I don't think there's a need to fake it, because we're human beings talking to other human beings, either online like Gwen does most of the time or in person like I do. And that's where it's from. I can't know everything, and I have no problem. When I was younger, I used to feel a sense of tragic failure if I didn't know something. If someone asked me, well, I love Danielle Steele, can you recommend a book like her? I'm like, I've never read Danielle Steele, to myself. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. And I feel like a failure. Now, if I was at the desk, I would turn to my colleague and say, you love Danielle Steele, help me out here.
Well, okay.
I think that's a pleasure to work team. What do you mean?
So this is why our dynamic is so delightful. Besides your loveliness. So another alternative to that would be not necessarily for you to try to come up with what you think is like Danielle Steele, but to have them tell you what they like about Danielle Steele.
Yeah.
And as they're talking, like, you might hear things that make you be like, oh,
for sure.
Well, wait a minute. I do have another recommendation, because like our sort of one of our kind of guiding principles is that like people don't necessarily like Danielle Steele because they only want to read romance, or they only mm-hmm. want to read a page turner, or they only mm-hmm. want to read something like that. It's the way that it makes you feel.
And absolutely.
So you might be able to recommend a book that makes
I was alighting. I was going to another point, but you're right, because I do engage in conversations for sure about mm-hmm. books I haven't read. So that right. happens all the time, and I love it. But what I was saying was that sense of physicality and of working with people, like how I felt like I had to be the know-it-all librarian.
Oh, yeah,
I really love, as the manager, like seeing, I don't feel jealous anymore when I see another librarian really engaged with another mm-hmm. patron. And I guess as a new librarian, you'll know that where you work, every librarian has their so-called fans, like has their people who say, oh, is Annie there today? Or is Gwen in?
And I love that because
they find the connection where they could talk about the books they love with that person. Yeah. I think that's totally fine and fair. Yeah. I mean, it's like you like Goodreads, you like reading reviews on Amazon. It's the same thing. It's a person, and you like that person. So I don't know how I got in this subject, but I love that different librarians find their people, so to speak, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that if they don't come to me, I used to see it as a failure. I guess I'm just talking about my giant ego. Now I actually love it. I just calmed down. Slam podcast, slam down, slap down. Okay. So I focused on the physical space and how do I bring people into the library, and how do I bring neighbors to meet neighbors, and also to interact with an expert or with an interesting experience like a play or whatever. And I also see the library as a crucible for creativity. Like Greenwich Village is a great neighborhood, historically very creative neighborhood. Any groups that want to meet there, create there, write there, I sort of love it that they're there. What's interesting about being a manager sometimes is like I have so much going on, and sometimes 50% of what goes on, literally, I don't really know, because mm-hmm. I use our space, create in our space, and then when I talk to the people after or they tell me, come see our play, oh, I wrote a script that was sold, or I did something, I'm like, whoa, that really happened in the library. That's sort of amazing. But sometimes I don't even know what's going on in there, mm-hmm. which is sort of
a
cool thing, because it's trust. It's also trusting I engage with who wants to use the spaces and trust that they will use them wonderfully. And they usually do. They almost really always nice. Do.
It's also trust in your staff, which is also pretty great.
Yeah.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car. It's the two-door coupe that was there for your first drive. The hatchback that took you cross-country and back. And the minivan that tackles the weekly carpool. For the cars you couldn't live without, trust Amica Auto Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
So to a lot of patrons, they walk in the library, they see people at desks with name tags, and they have no idea what differentiates them from each other. What does the library branch manager actually do?
I can't wait to hear.
It's been like three different jobs, because I started last century.
Oh my gosh.
1999. Wow. You know, the world was a lot different. The library world was a lot different. So I never thought I would stay in one position for as long as I have, but it has changed multiple times. So it feels like different jobs all the time. I remember very well when I started that the library world was very much like, we don't do that, we do this. And if I had an idea like, maybe we should have like put on a play, I would be told then, we don't do that. And now it's the opposite. It's like, do whatever that's reactive to the community, whatever you think might work. For a while, we used to say, well, times are changing. Do you remember that? Because the library did, New York Public Library didn't change for a very long time. And we always said, well, it's too big. The organization's just far, far, far too big to change. And I was satisfied with that answer. I was like, it's a giant organization. But then it changed so radically and so much for the better. I mean, it gets better and better. I realized, oh, there is no such thing as we're changing because we're always going to change. In other words, the librarian profession is not about, okay, I got these skills, I have these skills, I'm done, I'm set, here's what I do. Change is the constant. So you never stop being reactive. You asked what I do. I feel like what I do most of the day is respond to inquiries and to needs. I want to take a computer class. I am a poet. I want to do a reading. I am furious that your sidewalk is broken. Things like that, and being very reactive. And most of the time I love it, but I realize that I can never quite dismiss a request because it might lead to something really interesting that the library can do. I mean, of course I'm blanking on showing off about all the fabulous things I've done, but some of the programs I've done have been so gigantic and so, taking place in the whole building. And it started with me just saying yes to a person. Like, hey, I have an idea. And I'm like, you know what? Let's try that. And then suddenly it's a thing. So I never feel like librarianship and as a manager of a physical space, I feel like I'm never quite going to fully say, I got it. Because the library is a space. It's real estate. It's you actually have space to do stuff. So anything can happen within that space, really. I mean, almost anything.
Frank, you sound really excited and maybe a little
crazy.
Surprised? I wouldn't say that. About the fact that it's changing and it's changing so much and for the better. And I'd love to hear what you see when you look around at what's different now than it was, say, 10 years ago.
It's interesting that you say surprised. It probably is an element within me because when I graduated library school, it was 1995, just before the internet hit huge and the library started getting internet-enabled computers. So I was the last sort of graduating class that was taught in the old school, which I sort of love. I sort of love the fact that I had that experience. And then when I was first training at New York Public Library, it was with these fantastic librarians, these great ladies usually. It was that old school, entering into a tradition of what libraries had been for 100 years. And it hadn't so-called changed that much. And it didn't need to because the library did what it did. It was the only show in town. We had the books. We had the information. And you know that story, which can also flip to the other way with that horrible archetype of librarians being very mean people. Right. But, maybe we were a little arrogant because we had all the information and the internet just said, chill out because now it's everywhere and you have to sort of, be a part of that. I feel like when I was truly panicked 8-9 years ago about where the library was going and where I was going in it, where my role was in it, technology would help release something new every year, and there would be new iterations of something. There'd be new formats. There'd be all that stuff. And I thought, I can't worry about this. It's going to keep going and going and doing what it does. Let it do what it does. I can't worry about it. So I accepted that I'm never quite going to be able to lose my vigilance about what I want to do and my enthusiasm because it looks like technology change is the new norm. It's just what it is. I make sure as a manager that technology is served to the public and they are engaged in it. But my particular passion is not that. So I just thought, I am going to keep on the lookout for people's creativity, people's interests, people's need to be together. And that's my focus. And that yields never-ending surprises. So that's why I look at it as changing constantly. I don't think the technological world will ever stabilize.
Gwen, I'm so curious to hear what you think, since you are not in a branch. You have a broader view. Is that assuming too much?
I think I have a different view for sure. And I think broader, you're right, in a sense that because I don't have sort of people standing in front of me every day, kind of like meeting the direct demands of their request, which is something I actually really, not to get cheesy, but that I really admire about Frank is that you're really able to meet it with such equanimity. Did I say that word right? Equanimity? Yeah. Equanimity? Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I should say.
Sorry. We're readers. We never say these words out loud.
That's a total example of a word that I read all the time and I know what it means, but I don't know how to say
the,
it.
The people but are the best and the hardest thing about the job, right. For sure. It's like, I never wanted to rise higher than this position because I don't want to be out of the front line. But it is tough.
Right.
Being on demand all day long. But it's also the only show for me. So.
Yeah. But it's really tough to sort of deal with that. And I mean, I was a frontline staff member. Like it is a very exhausting profession at the end of the day because people are coming to you with needs constantly. But my job, because it doesn't require that, you're right. I do think I sort of have like a more privileged or bird's eye view of what is going on. And I do think that like one of the ways that libraries are changing a lot is that we used to be gatekeepers of information. And now I think instead of keeping those gates, I think it's much more about what we in the library world call information literacy, which is really sort of trying to help people sort through all of the information that's out there. So that instead of like trying to tell you like, this is how you use the card catalog and kind of like guide you through looking for the information yourself, because it was always our job to help people find their own information and help people find their own way. But now I think it's very much our job to help people figure out what's real and what isn't. And so a lot of libraries are doing things that focus on like, what is fake news and how do you tell a good source online? And I do think that that resonates with my job too, because there's so much noise and chatter around books these days, which is wonderful in a lot of ways. Like I love book Twitter. Book Twitter has brought a ton to my life. And I know about a lot of things that I wouldn't without it. But at the same time, you really need somebody to help you sort through that sometimes. And that's why sites like Goodreads and sites like your site, Anne, I think really help people kind of narrow down that gigantic field of choices to be able to figure out where they fit into the whole thing. And that's kind of how I see my job as well.
I have never heard the phrase information literacy, and it's so perfect.
It's sort of perfect, but it's also sort of library jargon that like I kind of wish you could get away from that.
It's accessible, right? Library jargon.
Like, if you used to say that to a person, like they don't understand what that means.
Now all the What Should I Read Next listeners are totally tracking with you.
You can go into your library and be like, talk to me about information literacy, and your librarian's eyes will light up with joy.
The way to their heart. That leads me to a question I'm really curious about. What do you wish that you saw your patrons, either directly or the stories I'm sure you hear from the librarians you work with, what do you wish they would do in or with the library? What do you wish they knew? What resources do you wish they used? Either that they don't or that you feel like they're really underutilized and you wish they were used more.
Yes, I have two answers to this question. One is really simple, and it's the holds list. The number of people who do not put books on hold at their libraries is very high. I think that that's actually like a really specialized thing that we librarians take for granted that people know how to do because we view it as basic. It is not basic. And I think a lot of people don't know how to do it and don't even know that it's an option. So probably all of your listeners do, but I feel like I'm going to say it anyway, just in case. The holds list is just a way of putting your name on a waiting list, essentially, for a book, a physical book or a DVD or any kind of physical materials. And there's also digital holds lists and digital waiting lists for books that you can download from the library. And so it just really means that you get the thing that you really want as soon as you can possibly get it. And another thing I think people don't know is that you can put a hold on a book that hasn't been released yet. As long as it's in the catalog, if you know that your author is writing a new book and you really want to read it and you're super excited, you don't have to go to the bookstore on the day that it opens. You can put a hold on it in the library catalog and then you'll be one of the first to get that book, which sometimes can happen really, really fast.
Gwen, that's interesting because a lot of heavy hold users, I think, cannot imagine people not knowing about that service. So I'm glad you're promoting it.
I was always really surprised how many people did not know that. People who were like huge readers and really, really into books just had no clue that they could do that.
Well, you don't know what you don't know, and you have to go to the website. And if you're coming, I can see it. What's the second thing?
Our ebooks. The fact that libraries have ebooks and e-audiobooks that can be downloaded right from our website. It sometimes is not the easiest process. I will be the first to admit that I don't think that libraries and vendors always play nicely together. And I think that it's not always easy to find, to figure out the way that you download a book, particularly since people are doing it onto all sorts of different devices. But there's a little bit of a learning curve, but the learning curve is totally worth it. So easy, so fun. You can never get a fine on an ebook because you can never return it late because it just automatically returns it for you.
So when a patron says, I have no idea how to do this, what do you recommend
they do? There's a couple things that they can do. One is there are instructions that you can always use online, and you can always just Google it, and usually you will find it, and it will be very easy. Another is go to a workshop at the library. I used to run, actually, in my old job in Maryland, I used to run and help organize these workshops. We had a very high number of really awesome older readers at that library, and right around the holidays, their kids would all be getting them Kindles and Nooks and stuff for the holidays. And so...
So you knew how to plan your calendar.
We would add like extra sessions then. And we also, another part of that program that I loved was that high school volunteers also worked with them to like show them how to get library books under the, so.
That's amazing.
It was really, really great.
And like, I have to say that because I'm so comfortable, maybe too comfortable where I work, and I know the patrons, I've sometimes gotten very upset with that phenomenon.
Really?
Like a person comes in and says, my grandson got me a Kindle and I don't know how to use it. And I'm like, that grandson is a cheapo because getting you a technological device was easy for him. And he just thought, oh, let's bedazzle my grandma with a electronic device. And she is so anxious about it, doesn't know how to use it.
Particular, so you can show her.
Absolutely. But be thoughtful when you give gifts. But absolutely train them how to use it. But there was one particular woman I'm thinking of who was so anxious about it and so didn't really want to use it. I just actually put like slammed my hand down and said, look to your left. There is a giant room full of books. Go check one out and don't worry about this device. And then you know what she said? Well, it probably cost a lot of money. I'm like, it's not about money. It's free. Oh, I get very upset about that.
That is so funny. I would have the completely opposite reaction to that. I would be like, oh my God, I'm so glad you thought to come to the library so we can help you use this.
All right, so I'm a bad librarian.
You're a terrible librarian.
I just felt like she was so anxious and she was handed this anxiety. She didn't seek it out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course the woman learned how to use her Kindle. I'm not saying it didn't do that, but I also was trying to say, I guess I'm missing my point. I was trying to say, don't be anxious. There's no reason to be anxious. It's just a machine. You can conquer it, one.
Yes.
And two, you don't have to use it all the time if you don't want to.
Right. Right.
That's
actually,
all I'm saying.
And that's a huge point, is that people, I think, sometimes get e-readers and they're like, but wait, I love books. And it's like, you can have both.
Exactly.
You get e-readers and physical books. I'm quite devoted to my e-reader personally and read a lot on it a lot of the time, but I would never give up physical books. Never, never, never.
Right.
So anyway, that was a very long answer to the question of what do you wish more people knew about? I wish that more people knew that they can download ebooks from the library.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Someone is new in your branch. What do you wish everyone knew about the library?
My answer would be, I wish a new patron would know, this is personal for my branch, they would know the quality and integrity of the programming we do. I sometimes feel, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it's changed, to use that word again, that libraries certainly have a reputation for being warm and fuzzy places, and also places of children, where lots of children go and have great experiences, which they do. But for adults, it's sort of like, oh, no, I just love the memory of it. It was great when I was a kid. And, oh, really, you have DVDs and e-books and streaming video and... things like that. So I wish they would know that the library is really up to date, one. And two, the programming we do, like theater or music or any of the things I endeavor is super real. Like, it's an off-Broadway show. It's competitive with the art world out there. We have a gallery I like to show art in. I mean, and I think when people do discover it, which they don't think the library is that cultural center per se, when they do, they're like, I've heard this comment. Oh my God, that was really good. As if it shouldn't have been good. Like, it should have been amateurish because the library did it. I really strive to do interesting, good things for the public to attend for free. And I think that is another issue. The free issue might also be an interpretation of that new person coming into the library, that it's not as valuable, which is an interesting concept. I've even had some library patrons say, you should charge occasionally. It might add value to the person paying. They think that if they're paying, it might be more authentic and valuable. And I'm like, absolutely not. I will never, well, the library wouldn't let me, and I'm glad. But I think the library should always be 100% free. Always, always, always. And just keep raising the level of quality of what we do until, you know, when I'm old and gray in about 5 years, they will know that we're a good place to go for cultural arts and things like that. I focus a lot on the arts because it's the village and, you know, that has an historical connection there. And it's also something I love to facilitate, to help artists, to help any kind of creative person. So to know that the quality's there. I mean, we're doing a play right now with this fantastic cast, with a legit director. And I don't think they know that the library can facilitate that kind of program.
Gwen, I loved hearing how high schoolers volunteer to teach technologically less than savvy patrons how to use their Kindles. We have a lot of requests from readers like, I want to go volunteer my library. I don't know what to do. What are your favorite ways for patrons to get directly involved with the library, in volunteering or any other way? I can't think of because I'm not on the ground like you guys.
Yeah, that's a great question. Volunteering is amazing. Just going and talking to the manager or to whoever is doing the volunteer coordinating at your library and just saying, like, what's something that you guys really need? Maybe they need people who know how to use their Kindle really well and can come and show patrons how to do it. Maybe they need, you know, extra help with organizing library events. Maybe they need help organizing volunteers themselves. Like, if you have a particular skill to offer your library, that is really, really wonderful. Another thing to do is to get involved with your local Friends organization, which do fundraising for local libraries, and you can often help. A lot of times Friends organizations do annual book sales or semi-annual book sales. I used to live in Ithaca, New York, which was wonderful and I loved it. And there's like an amazing book culture there. And they had one of the biggest book sales. I don't want to say the biggest book sale in the country, but it might be the biggest book sale in the country. It's in this gigantic old warehouse that's just full of books. And they have volunteers all year long doing organizing and unpacking and sorting donations and doing things like that. And I think that would be really wonderful. And then the last thing I'm going to say is, being a library trustee, it's a little bit different here at the New York Public Library, partly because we're really big. But back in Ithaca, I was a library trustee, actually. And I learned so much about the way that the library operated and the inner workings of a library. It was actually while I was in library school, I was sort of recruited by the director of the library at the time, who was an amazing person and who really wanted kind of like younger, fresher voices in the trustee roles, because she was looking to make some really awesome changes at the library. And so I think that really taught me a tremendous amount about the library, and I think was pretty helpful to them also, to just have trustees who kind of really cared about the day-to-day operations and could sort of see clearly what was really going on there.
Oh, that's so interesting. We actually heard from a listener who's a trustee. I'm going to play that for you real quick.
Hi, Anne. This is Jill from Glen Ellyn, Illinois. I think the best way that I got to know all of the wonderful things that my local library does is serving a term as a trustee. All of the programs and services and circulation materials that our library has is just, it's so impressive. And I've learned how our library does a great job of serving every single demographic. You know, the youngest group of kids who can check out toys. There's play packs that our librarians put together. It's especially great for grandparents to check out when their grandkids come to visit. That's one example of how we serve the young ones in our community, all the way up to our senior citizens. Our librarians do a phenomenal job providing programming and services for members of our community who live in a local assisted living facility, even though they themselves might not be able to physically get to the building. So from the littlest ones to the oldest ones in our town and everything in between. Our library does a phenomenal job of meeting the needs of our community in so many fun and cool ways. It may seem odd to get the most out of your library is to give of your time, but it certainly has been a rewarding experience for me. Highly recommend volunteering so you can learn all the ins and outs of what goes on there.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's so great. And also don't underestimate how much you're really helping the library too. Like that's a really, really important job.
So that's something you could do is go up to your circulation desk or your research librarian or the two places where people always are stationed at my local branches and say, can I talk to you about being a trustee or volunteering or donating to the book sale? That's something you could do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can always look on the website too.
Gwen, so as someone who hasn't always been at the NYPL, what's unique about working in this library system?
Oh, that's such a good question. There's a lot. I think its size is really impressive. And more so even than its size is its diversity. Like it sort of goes without saying that a library system this size that is trying to serve the needs of so many people is going to have a lot of different stuff going on. But I'm constantly amazed at the differences from branch to branch, at the differences between what certain users want and what other users don't want. And trying to meet the needs of all of those people and sort of be one step ahead of it. Like the idea, sort of what Frank was talking about earlier, that like you're having this incredibly high-end quality arts programming. Certainly that's true in many of our branches, and in others of our branches, that's not the focus at all. Like that has nothing to do with what's going on. And it's so much about homework help, and it's about finding tutors, and it's really kid focused. Like there's just so much diversity in the system. And one of the things that we actually talk a lot to our staff about that I really try to keep in mind in my own work is something that a lot of library Twitter people talk about a lot, the idea of kind of how important it is to read outside your comfort zone and to think about your patrons and the people you're trying to serve. And so I think for a long time, the history of librarianship is not always really pretty and it's not always really diverse. I'm really impressed with our staff here at NYPL, but I also think that in general, as a profession, we have a long way to go in a lot of ways. And one of the best ways to do that is to read outside your comfort zone and to read things that feel different and to not create book lists and not create sort of library materials that focus only on one kind of experience, that really focus on lots of different experiences. I think we're in a place in the world right now where it's really, really important for us to look outside ourselves. And I found a real commitment to that here that I've been very consistently impressed with. And so I think that's something that I'm proud of to work here. And I hope that it is in lots of other places too.
Frank is a lifer. What do you find unique about working in the New York Public Library system?
A life
sentence over here.
I guess that remains to be seen.
Yeah, well, you're right. What's unique? I think, like I said before, about how the gigantic system that is the New York Public Library has changed so much and been so reactive to the world around it that I don't, you know, maybe because as a lifer, I have no clue what it's like outside of the New York Public Library. I'm also from New York. So it's like I've been here all my life and most of my professional career, almost all of it.
A friend of mine went to a wedding in New Orleans, met a man who lives in Kentucky, and got married. She used to work at the Soho branch at the New York Public Library, and now she does not. She left.
Whoa.
If that happened to you, what would you miss?
If I went to another library system?
And not just another library system, but like a seriously different other library system in a different part of the country. What would you think back fondly on? Now, not like better or worse or anything, but what would make you go, ah, I remember my days at the NYPL?
I hope I don't insult anybody else like outside of New York City or what a big city is versus a not so big city. Sometimes I fantasize about leaving New York because New York is tough. It's crazy. It's nonstop. So sometimes I imagine like to see something have natural beauty around me every day rather than just, you know, giant buildings and stuff. It is a fantasy, but then I always say, I just don't think I could leave that sort of incredible diversity, that gigantic range of people, that center of a lot of things happening and being a part of that, even though I know a lot of communities across the country are diverse as well. Mm-hmm. Like Gwen alluded to encounter the amount of requests or interactions that I have during the day with such a range of people is so exciting, frankly. And it makes me learn. it really makes me learn because like I'm always interested. Like I just talked about like having arts programs, but we also have English as a second language programs too at Jefferson Market Library. And I really love having that range. It's the people. It's the people, and it's also the people I work with. I love talking to other people in the library because they also have skills and interests. Like I said, finding your communities. I talked to another adult librarian, and I assumed that of course she'd want to be like putting on plays and having poetry readings. And she was like, no, I love doing my knitting class and my community loves that knitting class. And we talk a lot and we learn about books that way. And that's how we talk about books. And I was like, I would never do a knitting class. Different talents, different interests, different passions. And I love encountering that. And I love bringing it together in the library in which I particularly work. So
that's a great answer.
Thank you.
Readers, you're clearly podcast fans, and I have a new one for your playlist. It's called Forever 35, and it's a podcast about taking care of yourself without taking yourself too seriously. Hosts Kate Spencer and Dori Shafrir aren't experts. They're just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums. My own friend first recommended Forever 35 to me because she thought I'd enjoy listening to Kate and Dori discuss the kinds of things we talk about ourselves, like how to get enough sleep, how to organize your pantry or purge your closet, how to survive on the Whole 30, a new lipstick or lotion to try. Plus, each week they interview a special guest about their own self-care routines, guests like Jasmine Guillory, Jenny Han, and poet and publicist Kima Jones. Forever 35's full-length episodes air weekly on Thursdays, and I also really like the mini-episodes that air on Mondays, where Kate and Dori feature reader emails and voicemails because listening to them answer questions off the cuff is really fun. To listen to the show, just search for Forever 35, no space between forever and 35, in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can learn more about the show at forever35podcast.com and also join the conversation on the podcast Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Forever35podcast. Happy listening. Okay, I can't let you all go without asking you this. Can you each tell me, I'd love to hear about one book that means a lot to you? The kind when you think about it, you just go, oh, that book.
Oh, I can answer right away.
Go ahead, you go first.
It's fairly recent. Gwen and I on the podcast read a book together. Occasionally we'll do that and read one book and then discuss it on the podcast. And both of us read Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. Have you read it?
Yeah, but only recently, like only in the past couple of years.
Me too. I mean, I'd read it a couple of years ago, seemed like a long time, and then I reread it and I thought it would be less of an experience, and it was not. It was as powerful as it was the first time. And so another librarian, I'll toot my horn, gave me a compliment saying it is such a great book recommendation. Most people come back, did not expect the experience they were going to have that they had. But the first thing I thought was Kazuo Ishiguro's Never Let Me Go that Gwen and I discussed, because when Gwen and I discussed it, to me, it's very personally meaningful that we both at the same time as we were discussing it came to some realization about the book and both sort of teared up at the same time and felt like we were going to lose it for a second and then regained ourselves on the podcast. And it might not have read that way on the podcast, but the emotions shared with Gwen, discussing it with her, because I love Gwen and I love that book. So that moment to me and that book were so, so meaningful. And I feel like I could cry now.
Oh my gosh. That is, first of all, thank you. That is really lovely. And second of all, I actually didn't really know you felt that way. And I feel the exact same that like, when I think about that book, I think about us talking about it.
I think
that
about
book.
You.
Yeah.
You're very connected to that book.
Me too. And it's so funny because I remember very distinctly finishing that book when I was on an airplane.
Oh.
Right. Exactly. And then coming in.
Oh, that's hard.
It was like 2 days later coming in to like actually really process that book with you. And I feel like that's when I actually finished the book, is when you and I were talking about it. So funny.
So yeah.
We're so tied up in each other's reading lives.
I know.
Both the two of us and also all people, right?
Yeah.
But like things like where you finished a book or where you started a book or when you thought about a book, like it's so present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's true. Mm-hmm. So what's your one?
So I was going to pick a book that I think I talked about on the podcast, but was not one of our reading challenge books for each other. A book called Lucky Boy by Shanti Sakaram. Do you know that book, Anne?
I've seen it. I've never read it, though.
Oh, my goodness. It's just a book that I find myself thinking about all the time because there's a lot of resonance with a lot of what's going on in the world right now. It's the story of immigration, the story of refugees, and it is very, very much about motherhood and what it means to love a child also. And I have a 4-year-old, and so that's a thing that I think about a lot. And it's just a book that is really, really personally meaningful to me and relevant to me. And I've recommended it 1,000 times. And I just really love it. And I wish everyone would read it.
I love to hear about books that other people love and wish everyone would read.
I want to hear what yours is.
Trying to think of one that isn't just like sappy.
Oh,
really?
Sappy's okay.
I really love sappy.
Yeah, we both love sappy. We're here for that.
Okay, I'm not going sappy.
Are you gonna go highfalutin on us?
I hope not. Right. Well, I talk too much about Wallace Stegner Crossing to Safety, so I'm trying to branch out to a novel I only talk about like half as much. And it's Maggie O'Farrell, This Must Be the Place. Because I'm a sucker for a family story where everybody means really well, but it goes horribly anyway, and it's kind of disastrous and awful, but there's a little bit of an open door at the end. I love that kind of book. Also, A Place for Us, the new one by Fatima Mirza. Loved it. Hits all the same notes.
That's on my shelf right now.
Isn't that so good. Sarah Jessica Parker's first book?
Yes. Yeah. And at first I was like, I haven't seen a movie in the theater in like 7 years. Like, should I really be reading the Sarah Jessica Parker imprint? But I picked it up anyway. And it's so, now I don't know that you'll like it, Gwen, but it is the kind of book where I want everyone to read it because I loved it. And I want to talk about it with them right now.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. That's a great recommendation.
Yeah. Thank you.
And the first thing I thought when you said, Matt, I felt like my book recommendation hat was like Ann Tyler. Is Anne Tyler like Maggie O'Farrell?
Let me think.
Because I thought of families who mean well where everything goes wrong. It's sort of very Anne Tyler, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever.
But I feel like Anne Tyler is a little less earnest. Like, okay. I can go earnest pretty comfortably. And Anne Tyler likes to put in a character who's just adult. Like,
right.
On a regular basis.
And a lot more.
Where you're like, wake up, everybody. Wake up and your life will be better.
Good point.
Get them out of your life.
See, good point. That was exactly a book recommendation conversation that I would have in the library. And someone would say, well, you know, Anne Tyler's. And like you said. And then we'd move on from there. That's how it works.
Will readers of one likely enjoy the other?
Yeah.
Yes, and absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Frank and Gwen, this was a delight. Thank you so much for talking libraries and, of course, books with me today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us. This was really fun.
Hey, readers. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gwen and Frank today. Head to the podcast site to share your favorite library memories or your favorite local library program. Or if you're a librarian, please let us know what you love about your job. The more library love, the better. That page is at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/138. That's 138. And it's where you'll find the full list of titles we talked about today. And if you like Book Talk, and I know you do, make sure to check out their podcast, The Librarian Is In. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Readers, next week I'll be chatting with Eric Zimmer. Eric interviews thoughtful people who have big ideas about how to make conscious, creative effort toward a life worth living on his podcast, The One You Feed.
Whenever I see something about a book, I will usually follow up on it because I'll be like, well, what is that? It's like if I walk into your house and you've got a bookshelf behind you, I'm going to have a very difficult time having the conversation with you until I can go review the bookshelf. It's going to be on my mind while we're talking, like, what all's back there?
Yeah.
Carry that out into the way I move through the world. And it's like, oh, there's a sliver of a book over in the corner there. Let me go see what that is.
Tune in next week to hear about how a folk story factors into Eric's reading life, his most embarrassing library experiences, and what it means to feed the good wolf. Subscribe now so you don't miss a thing in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And here's your friendly reminder that you can now listen to What Should I Read Next on Spotify. If you are on Twitter, let me know there at Ann Bogle. That is Ann with an E, B as in books, O-G-E-L. Tag us on Instagram to share what you are reading. You can find me there at Ann Bogle and at What Should I Read Next. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And as Rainer Maria Rilke said, ah, how good it is to be among people who are reading. Happy reading, everyone.